I think if we took a moment each day and say, with all the things that I desire to receive today and experience today, what part of it was for somebody else, right? If you ask this, that one question, I think it would be shocking in a day to see really maybe how little time or not enough time was spent in doing that, right? So just by asking that, I think it's going to force each one of us to take action in that way. Welcome to Spiritually Hungry.
Yay, just me and you again.
Just the two of us.
Yes.
We can make it if we try.
What? Keep going, when you stop.
Come join me, what do you mean keep going?
All right. Just the two of us.
The two of us.
There you go.
Keep going and do a duet. All righty, today we are going to continue the conversation we had a few episodes ago on desire. We filled a whole episode with our ideas about what our desires reveal about us, and we still have so much to say. So this is part two. We ended when, Michael, you had barely scratched the surface of what you wanted to share. But first, I want to talk about the law of attraction. Do you like how I just fit that in?
I will have nothing to say today.
So let's just make sure we get everybody on the same page, because law of attraction is a very frequently used term. It's a sexy term.
But also, I think, misunderstood to some degree.
Correct, Amundo. This law states that the universe, which is unseen, takes what you think about the most and creates it in your experience, the scene. This is a quote that I've always loved by Lao Tzu. And he was an ancient Chinese philosopher. And he once said, "Watch your thoughts, they become your words. Watch your words, they become your actions. Watch your actions, they become your habits. Watch your habits, they become your character. Watch your character, it becomes your destiny." So the point of this is really the basic idea is we attract what we put out. And I'm not sure we're often very aware of what it is we're putting out. If we don't know we're doing it, we attract positivity or negativity based on our thoughts and the energy you're putting out into the world. So basically, that leads us into be careful what you wish for, because often I think we think about, I want this, I want that, I want this. And we never really think, okay, when we have that, what will it be? And those things that I desire, which part of myself is it coming from? What is it connected to? There's often a very big disconnect in terms of what we desire and want to attract and what will ultimately bring us
benefit.
What I think we're really looking for, which is joy, happiness, fulfillment, right? That's long lasting.
And I would say, I would go so far as to say that very often what people's basic desire, what they think their basic desire is actually the opposite of what will bring them true and lasting fulfillment.
Right. Meaning you can attract the things you want, but they may not be the things you should attract.
Right.
Sometimes we desire things because on the outside, they look amazing. We want a high profile job, but we don't consider the weight of responsibility or loss of freedom that might come with it. We want more and more expensive car or bigger house without a thought that the cost of upkeep, what will that look like? Or the increased stress that may accompany many of those things. And there's a cautionary tale. Do you know who Mavis Wencik is?
No, I don't think so.
You shouldn't really, I guess. No. She won.
I have a question. Do you know Frank Galoshes is?
I do. Her brother.
Yes, exactly.
She won.
I have another question. I can go all day. Anyway,
this is going to be a fun game, by the way. Can you imagine going to dinner with somebody
and just making up names?
Yeah. And they feel really stupid by the end of that dinner. No, be like, oh, I don't know any of those people.
So me and Miriam, our older daughter, have this game where when we're walking, we like ask each other questions and you're supposed to make up answers. Like, you know, what is that building? And you just make up an answer and you win by being believable.
Yeah, I've been on that walk with you guys. It was more fun for the two of you, I can absolutely say. Okay, but anyway, Mavis won $758.7 million in the Powerball jackpot in 2017. Wow, that's a lot of money. And she believed, like anybody would, that it would be rainbows and sunshine after her win. But once news of the win broke, Mavis experienced a rush of attention that only increased in time. There would be incessant solicitations by those she knew, and more disturbingly, by those she did not. The media followed her for weeks, and the scammers became so persistent and intense, she had to hire protection to help ward them off. Mavis reached threats to her life and her family, and she felt vulnerable and suspicious of those around her. The gleaming prize had become tarnished by the worries and anxieties that had come with it that she never could have anticipated. I'm going to give you one more example, then I'm going to give you a chance to talk. Did you ever see the movie 13 Going on 30?
No, you ever see the movie?
Oh, come on. You're going to sound silly here. It's actually a really, really good movie that's known. Jennifer Garner was in it, and her character, it's one of, actually Miriam loved this movie growing up. It's one of her favorite lines. She wanted to be, Jennifer Garner's character wanted to be 30, flirty, and thriving on her 13th birthday. And so she got her wish, but she also gave up her entire adolescence, not to mention the love of her life. And her dream cost her much more than it cost her much more than she thought she would. She lost so much, really so much of her life and beautiful experiences. And she became a different version of herself. We'll just have to watch it.
I don't think I will.
We're going to watch it with Abigail now.
Okay.
So I think what we want to talk about is really reshaping our desires and being aware of what they are and where they come from.
Yes. If I can take a step back.
Sure.
Because as I think about desire.
Take a two-step back.
I actually do want to take two steps back. Thank you. I think we have to appreciate the grand nature of desire. In the ancient Kabbalistic teachings, they say that in our reality, in our universe, there's only two things. There's what we call the light of the creator, more clearly defined as a desire to share or to bestow goodness. There's that force that is, we can call it God, we can call it the creator, but that force that desires to bestow goodness. And the creation, humanity, is only one thing, desire to receive. Sometimes we refer to it as a vessel. But basically, you understand that the foundational creation is only two things. Well, the first of the force that wasn't created, that was ever present, the desire to share, which is we call the light of the creator, or the endless light of the creator. And then there is creation called the vessel, or the desire to receive. And that's really all that we are. When we speak about our soul, for example, what is our soul? Our soul is our desire. So I think it's really important to have a true appreciation for the grand nature of desire. And therefore, it is what causes either the greatest benefit in life or the greatest pain in life. And the use of our desire has to be predicated on an understanding of how foundational it is to who are you? Who am I, Michael? I am actually desire. That is what makes me me. And how I use that desire, in what ways I choose to manifest it, that will decide in this moment how I experience life and for eternity, how I experience eternity. So there are a few topics that should be thought about and appreciated and dealt with delicately and carefully as desire. Desire is more important than almost anything else in life. And how you treat your desire is the most important. One of the most important decisions that we make every single day. And so the idea is where we invest our desire, I mean, where we manifest our desire, where do we direct our desire, has to be thought out very clearly. And I would actually ask our listeners to really take a moment or 5 minutes or an hour and think about your desires and where do you manifest them, right? At the highest level, you want to protect your desire. So manifesting it in what we would call a desire to share, a desire to do good, is the most strongest way to actually live a fulfilling life.
When we think about our desires, we want to expand our vision to be focused on the collective and not just the individual. And certainly even in the individual, is it something that will ultimately help the collective, or is it only for your own pursuit? So there's many levels and layers in each step, first both personally and collectively.
And if I can one more maybe slightly deeper idea, which I think is really important to think about, to live life based on. Fulfillment comes from being as similar as possible to the force that permeates everything, what we call the endless light of the creator. When you're in line, in tune with that force, you're at your happiest. Because that's really, if you ask your soul, what do you want, right? If you ask your soul, what do you want? The answer won't be, I want more money, or I want this car, or I want this house, or I want this meal. All those things are great, right? But they're not the core desires. It's important to say, what is the core desire? Well, the core desire of you, the core desire of your soul, is to live a life that is in tune, that is similar to that force that permeates everything, that created everything, and that sustains everything, what we call the endless light of the creator. What is the nature of that force? Is that what we call desire to share? So when you direct your desire in ways that benefit others, it doesn't mean, again, enjoy the steak, enjoy the car, enjoy the house. All those are lower elements of that desire that are important. But what's the core driver of life? If what the core driver of your life is, I want to be in tune with that creative force because that's when I'm going to be the happiest. There's a teaching that says that you're unhappy when you're not in your soul's right place, and you're the happiest when your soul is in its right place. What is the right place? It's not a physical place. It's a state of being. And a state of being that is most in tune, in line with that creative force of the universe. And its nature is, as we refer to it, a desire to share. So the reason why it's important to be directing our desire in ways that benefit not only myself, but others, is because when I do that, I'm living a life that my soul desires. I am living a life that is in tune with the force of all the goodness that exists in this world. And therefore, I experience goodness and I experience happiness.
And you might not be attuned with that. So
this is actually, I think, each individual and humanity's task. How do you navigate or really transform your natural selfish manifestation of desire into a more altruistic or more really bigger desire that includes others to also have goodness?
So it starts with, you have a steak, get a steak for someone else. You have a house, share the house. Like, at least the things that maybe you've already to this day, until this day, pursued just for your own pursuit, see how you can bring in people into that. The second is, next time you pursue something, instead of thinking first about yourself, think about maybe what the collective is. And the collective includes any group that you're part of. It's your city, it's your family, your country, your community. And to be part of that collectively means knowing that your existence is very much is to provide support, be part of that group.
Well, and I think it's a very important point. I think, you know, if you ask maybe even many of our listeners, why are you in this world? What's your purpose?
Yeah, that would not be the answer.
It wouldn't be, right? The answer might be, oh, to become the best musician, to become the best this.
Make my mark in the world.
Exactly.
Or whatever.
And in truth, and again, this is why I am so happy that we're speaking about this, because I think this is maybe not sort of practical, you know, in a direct way, but it really goes to the foundation of life, of our direction in life and our purpose in life. And like you said, you will only be at your happiest. You will only reach the greatest potential of your happiness if really what is directing you in life, your North Star, is how do I bring goodness to more and more people? It could be, by the way, it doesn't have to be to a million people. It could be to one more person. It could be to 10 more people. But that thought, how do I manifest my desire in a way that brings benefit, right? So, and again, it could be through music, it could be through film, it could be through cooking, it could be in a million different ways.
It's the intention behind it.
But the intention, exactly, has to be that I want to manifest my desire for the benefit of others.
Well, your father, the Rav, he used to joke about this, but he'd say, I'm the most selfish person in the world, because I know that the only way I can receive more light is by sharing more and more with others. I spend my life sharing with everybody. And I think this is the kind of selfishness we'd all like to cultivate, right? It would do us good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, and I think—
So it's not doing it because you're a good person. It's really for the betterment of yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, again, if we understand, desire is also a finite force. You know, unfortunately, people have a great desire. Kids have great desire, right? They want everything they see, right? They want to play with everything. They want to eat everything they see. And even people...
Sorry, it just reminds me of when Abigail was little, our youngest. She was like 3 years old, and we went through the toy store, and I said, well, just you can take something in each hand. And we'll get that. You know what she did?
She
decorated her entire, both arms. She had purses and bags, like things hanging off both. And she, I have a picture of her. She's waddling down the aisle. So, and if she had more space on her little body at that point, she would have found a way. She had something on her neck. Like she literally, and I just, it was the cutest thing. But that is, to your point, so much desire.
Exactly. And even people in their teens and then 20s, 30s, at a certain point, unfortunately, for most people, you know, some people, you know, it could be at 70 and 8 or
6. It wanes.
It begins to wane, right? And, you know, today they say it's because people don't have enough testosterone. Sometimes they start doing injections, but that's not really why it wanes, right? It wanes because, and this is, again, if you really internalize this understanding, this change.
It's such a, I remember when I discovered this, like such a profound teaching.
Where you invest your desire, you are binding that desire forever. So let's assume, you know, a person wants to achieve something selfishly and he or she invests, you know, let's assume just for the sake of clarity, you have 100, you know, pounds of desire, right? And throughout life, you're manifesting it. Okay, I like this steak. I like this car. I like this house. I like this relationship, you know, and the question is, over the first 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years of your life, where did you invest your desire? If the majority of places where you manifested your desire were selfish-based, only for me, not thinking about even one other person or others, then what you've actually done is you've attached your limited desire to places that are limited, and limited things end.
Finite.
And desire actually dies if it's manifested in a place that is completely selfish.
And your desire for more dies, is what you're saying.
Of course. So. Because desire, again, you had 100 pounds of desire, used up 60, and you put it in places that were selfish, that were finite. So you're now weighted down by 60 pounds of dying desire. You have 40 pounds left, and you live another 20, 30, 40 years, and you take those 40 pounds. And again, if you invested 100%, as unfortunately many people do, invested the majority of your 100 pounds of desire in places that were selfish and finite, at a certain point, be it 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100, you are now weighted down by dying desire. Conversely, if you spend the majority of your desire, again, enjoy the steak just for yourself. Enjoy the car just for yourself. But on the whole, if you invested 60 pounds of your desire in others, right? I'd like to take this hour and share it with you or with somebody else. And I'd like to take this money that I made and share it with others and so on and so forth. And I'm living a life where I'm manifesting the majority of my desire in things that are eternal. What's eternal? Eternal is when it's done for the sake of others. Then when I'm 70 and 80 and 90, not only is my desire not waning, but my desire is actually increasing because the desire that I've already manifested, it's manifested in eternal things. So
it creates more and more. It's like a circuitry.
Exactly.
That doesn't end.
That's why,
isn't it? So, you know, plant trees that you'll never eat the fruit from is that idea.
It's one of my, it's a beautiful, right? It's a quote from the story in the Talmud where I think it was Alexander the Great was traveling through what was the land of Israel at the time. And he sees an old man planting these trees that take, you know, many, many years to grow. And he says to the old man, he says, why are you planting trees from whom you will never benefit, neither from their fruit nor from their shade? He says, well, my ancestors planted trees so I can enjoy. I'm planting trees so my descendants can enjoy. And that consciousness, right? Again, it doesn't mean that you have to be, you know, a giving person all the time, but it does mean that as you think about your life and where you're directing your energy, is a majority of it, of your desire, being manifested in eternal things. And eternal things is just anything that is not done for yourself, anything that is done for others. And again, the beautiful and the exciting and inspiring truth is that if you do direct your life in this way and you're mindful of where you manifest your desire, you know, I'll use the example, you know, we, Monica more than I, but you know, we're health conscious. We, you know,
Monica more than I.
It's true. What
it's
do you mean?
A lot true.
Oh, it's a lot true. Okay. But you said as if I was saying something that wasn't true. So, but like there's certain things that we
but
know.
You've evolved a lot.
Thank you. Thank you. So there's things that we know are, you know, we know sugar is not good for us. We know there's many things that we know aren't good for us. And so my view, you know, when I was, you know, years ago when I wasn't even thinking about these things, you know, there was no consciousness around. So I, you know, sugar, you know, alcohol, all these things, you know, I had no conscience around the fact that they're not good in the long
term.
Dairy,
preservatives, okay. Excess in meat.
Keep going. But the point is, my point is, and now what is it? Doesn't mean that I no longer eat anything with sugar, nor that I do not drink alcohol and so on and so forth. But I'm aware of the fact. And again, this is a phrase I don't like using, but that you're putting poison in your body. Now, a little bit of poison won't kill you. A lot of poison will kill you. And the point is, that to be clear, again, we are meant to enjoy everything in life, even sometimes for ourselves. As I said, enjoy that steak, enjoy that drink, enjoy that car, enjoy that house. But be mindful of the fact that when you're doing that, that's okay, as long as it's not the majority. As long as what's really directing you in life, the what you're really desiring, and what, more importantly, where you're desiring to manifest your desire on a daily basis is in eternal things, things that have a circuitry to them, which would mean simply that they are for the benefit of others as well, then you will see. And this is something that, you know, will, you know, I've seen people who live their lives in this way, and no matter what their age, their desire was only growing. And what we're saying to our listeners is that even though when you look at the world, and maybe you know some relatives when they were 70 seemed not to have that, you know, had certainly less desire than when they were in their 40s or when they were in the 80s and so on and so forth. But you and I and every one of our listeners has the possibility of living with a growing desire all the time, and that is true. And that will manifest in every area of our lives, right? In relationships, we know you know this again better than I. You know all the counseling that you do with couples. Unfortunately, usually, right, at a certain point into a relationship, the desire that was there at the beginning is no longer there. It is either stagnant or diminishing. Mm-hmm. That's what we look. That's the majority of the world. That's not the way it has to be. And all this goes back to how are you managing your desire? You know. It will not, you know, and even, you know, when we talk about people who date a lot, right? The reality is that, date is the wrong word, right? So have their fun, right? The reality is if people are having their fun in their 20s, let's say, it'll be meaning, what does that actually mean? It means that they're manifesting their desire in ways that are not for the benefit of others. That diminishes one's desire. So that when they finally get married at 27, at 35, whatever that age is, their desire is now diminished.
In that area.
So it's like I said, I get very excited about this. And I think, I hope to, our listeners are inspired to really refocus and treat your desire with the preciousness that it truly holds.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, especially if they have been successful in some areas, especially early on, the mentality becomes, I see something I want, I should have it. I want this, I should have it. Without really pausing and saying, well, should you have it? Not everything you desire should you actually have. Some things, as we said at the beginning, will be to your detriment. But I think often it's, you know, people have all kinds of excuses like, why shouldn't I have it if it makes me happy? And I want to speak about happiness for a second, because what we are sharing actually is part of the formula to ensure that you do have joy and fulfillment and a sense of purpose, which is so necessary for our happiness long term, right? This is the formula, because if not, then you will find yourself in your 70s, maybe a little bit before, maybe a little bit later, of, you know, I don't feel like doing anything. It's a really sad place to be. I don't know if you saw the documentary Mission Joy.
No, I didn't.
So it came out.
Did you see the documentary Sneakers Gone?
Sweetie, you're showing over and over again today how you're not like
socially conscious.
With it. Yeah,
I'm not
I don't
with
know.
It. I'm sorry.
It came out in 2021.
Keep on telling my daughter Miriam I am hip and edgy.
Sure. I don't think she's listening.
No, she's not.
And I don't think I believe
joke.
It either.
Okay.
It illuminated the playful and exuberant relationship between two spiritual leaders and survivors, the Dalai Lama and
I actually did see it.
I guess it really made a lasting imprint on you. and Archbishop Desmond Tutu. One is a Buddhist monk and the other one is an Anglican bishop. Both experienced great hardship in their early lives. And for those of you who are not familiar with their story, I think it's worth looking into. But they were both able to keep their sense of humor and joy intact. And this is what I thought personally was interesting. When they asked Desmond Tutu how he kept his sense of joy, he described true happiness as being a gift to others rather than a merely a pursuit of oneself. And that's also a precept in Kabbalah.
Meaning when you see yourself as a gift to others.
Yeah, rather than just pursuing it for yourself. The kind of happiness goes beyond the moment. Since every state is temporary, of course, we'll feel happy if we won this award or that award or finished my latest book or had a gourmet meal that turned out well that I made. You know, like Miriam gets really excited about her cooking, which is beautiful. But these examples of my own happiness, fulfilling my own desires, is only half the equation. And the Dalai Lama explains this and Kabbalah echoes this. The key to true deep joy is not in the transitory acquisition of things, accolades, or power. We can't understand joy without knowing and connecting to the plight of others. And I think that's just such an important point because we're talking about community and putting your desires in things that are going to help other people. But you also have to put yourself first in a place of feeling other people's pain, putting yourself in their situation for a moment to then get out of that lens of self only, which is easy to stay in if you don't do that.
I was going to say that I think it's an important question for our listeners to ask themselves.
Well, I had a question how can I help spread compassion and love? Like, what part of yourself is leading?
I have to say that again, I just think that's a grand statement. I would make it smaller than that.
How small would you make it?
I would say, how are you manifesting your desire today in a way that benefits others?
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yes. So my point is because that's, I think, very practical. And the point is this. It's not about being a spiritual person or a good person, but I guarantee you that if you make this a daily thought and manifest it in one way or another, right? Maybe you bake cookies for a friend or you make a meal for somebody, right? But most important, or you simply having a given hour of your time to somebody who needs your time. But the only way that we're going to be happy in the long run, and more importantly, that our desire continues to grow, this is a constant thought that we manifest. You know, I know a lot of...
Well, the thing is, you know, a way to do that, a shortcut, is instead of like, when we talk about desire again, it's like a lifetime. Like, what do I want to do in my lifetime? What do I want to manifest in this year? I think if we took a moment each day and say, with all the things that I desire to receive today and experience today, what part of it was for somebody else, right? If you ask that one question, I think it would be shocking in a day to see really maybe how little time or not enough time was spent in doing that, right? So just by asking that, I think it's going to force each one of us to take action in that way.
Yeah, it reminds me, there's an ancient teaching that says that if a person is lacking something important, you know, soulmate, children, and he has a friend who has that same lack, if you pray for your friend, you will receive that same gift first. Whereas if you pray for yourself, no guarantees. Mm-hmm. And that's the idea. The idea is, even when it comes to prayer, even when it comes to thinking about others, right? How many people know they're so focused? I need this, right? I need, you know, I'm lacking this. I'm in pain about this. Let me focus my, if it's prayer, meditation, life, actions around my lack. The reality is that if you actually want a quicker solution to your lack, find somebody else with the same lack, take care of them, and you'll see that lack gets filled for you more quickly. And so, but again, what I think is so important is when this conversation can be misconstrued as you know, being spiritual or altruistic. It's really about finding the right way to manifest your desire so that you actually receive everything that you're meant to be receiving.
Well, science backs this up. There's a study led by Dr. Sonia Limbermersky at the University of California, Riverside. And the subjects took part in what they called happiness interventions. So the research found that those who performed acts of kindness for themselves felt happier, but that feeling was short-lived. However, those who performed kind acts for others were happy and stayed that way anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks beyond the time of the kind act. On a cellular level, kind acts also produced positive changes in the RNA gene expression in the subjects' blood samples, suggesting healthier and more robust immune profiles. Happiness through giving, then, is also duly beneficial. It helps both the recipient and the giver. But isn't that so interesting that it lasted that much longer when you did it for another person?
Right. And but it dovetails perfectly with what we're saying. Because what you're doing is you're manifesting your desire in an eternal place. Exactly. And therefore, of course, the benefits that you receive will be so cool. Much longer lasting. Mm-hmm. I think, again, related to this, and I really want to underscore this idea that there's an ancient teaching that says the following. If you manifest what we call the channel of joy, fulfillment, happiness, is the same channel as desire. And when you manifest your desire in purely selfish acts consistently, you are actually cutting off your ability to receive and experience joy. Because they are very much related. Because
that's interesting. So the things that you once enjoyed, you don't enjoy anymore. Exactly. Which is, people don't often connect that, right? Like, I used to love to do this, but now.
Exactly. So the cycle is this. The more you, again, manifest your desire, consciously or unconsciously, in things that are finite, the less your ability to experience joy. Mm. Because it is desire that creates a level of joy, right? If you have a steak in front of you, I'm sorry to all, I've used this a few times.
Well, you really
all
like
the
steak.
Vegetarians, right? But if you have a steak in front of you, right, and you're full, right, you're not going to enjoy it. Or you'll have a slight enjoyment. If you're starving, you'll enjoy it that much more. So the correlation between desire, right, directly correlates to how much you will enjoy something. Mm-hmm. So, but when you diminish your overall desire by throwing it away, by not being careful about where you're manifesting it, necessarily you diminish your joy in all areas of your life, your family, your relationship, the food, the steak, the car, everything. So this is literally the most fundamental, I don't want to say change, but maybe change of consciousness that our listeners hopefully go through. Because again, you want to enjoy everything in your life more, protect your desire. Protect your desire.
Beautiful. Rav Ashlag said, the great Kabbalist Rav Ashlag, where we invest our desires is what we're tied to for eternity, as you said. So when we think about desire, so again, just in conclusion, it's if we focus on ourselves, we're only tied to what is singular. If we reframe our desires to include their larger collective, we stay connected to the whole and the light of the world. So basically, we each have a potential to change the world, but only if we're living a life dedicated to serving the collective. And I think, again, just that last idea, we have the ability to change the world. And most people, again, in that pursuit, because that's pretty spiritual. I want to change the world. I want it. But usually we think that, like, I have to be somebody important, special, unique, different. And while that's part of the formula, that's not it. If you're not thinking about what part of the world you belong in, and all the other things that go around you and that exist, we're never really going to hit the mark. We might have success, but it's never going to feel like success.
And we won't enjoy it. Right. Certainly not as much as we can or should.
Mm. Well, I can say you've made me hungry.
Yes.
Spiritually hungry, exactly. That is.
So I'd like to share a letter from one of our listeners. It's actually a question, so maybe you can help answer it. So, and it relates, even though obviously this episode is about desire, but we spoke about kindness. So Rebecca writes, I've been learning that people show care and kindness in different ways. So much so that I had no idea someone who I thought was being rude was actually being kind. Mm. So he says, what about doing a podcast on different types of kindness and care? It shows up differently between cultures, personality types, genders, and the way someone interprets the situation. That's a lot of variability, but there are standard ways that people can be kind, which you know better than I do. So I also,
I think showing care and being kind are two different things, and people can show care in many different ways, but kindness is pretty universal. I would love for Rebecca to write back, and I would love to hear more about the story of where she misunderstood kindness. And if you do that, Rebecca, then maybe we will come and do a podcast, but certainly we'll answer your question.
But I think it's a really important point, because we have spoken about this, that usually when we do acts of kindness towards others, or more importantly, when we're trying to take care of somebody else, we do it in the ways that we would want to receive it.
Exactly.
Rather than stopping and saying, no, not how would I want to be,
but what is this person
spoken
really
to now? How would I want to be supported now? What is this person?
Right.
And that takes a whole different view and more work, but definitely in the long term, more fulfilling, because like in this interesting case that Rebecca is sharing, it's possible that you're trying to do your best to help the other person and it could be received exactly in the wrong way.
Exactly.
Also, I'd like to share quickly this to hopefully inspire our listeners to share this podcast. One of our listeners wrote about the last episode on Apple Podcast. The Soul's Desire episode was so thought-provoking that I listened to it twice. This podcast is such a gift. It challenges me to think differently and grow. Thank you. So this is the perfect time to remind our listeners, continue to send your questions, comments, stories, inspirations to Monica and Michael at spirituallyhungry.life. Monica and Michael at spirituallyhungry.life. Continue to share this podcast with everybody you know. Go to Apple Podcasts, write 5-star reviews, and we hope that you enjoyed listening to this podcast as much as we enjoyed recording it.
Stay spiritually hungry.